This is Caps PA announcer Wes Johnson, and you're listening to Board the Pod!
Welcome back to a brand new episode of What the Puck. My name is Dan. I will be your host and only voice you are hearing this evening, unless, of course, my son decides to start screaming in the background. Brandon is unavailable. He got called into work last minute. He asked me to go solo this evening. Now, if you've been listening to us for a little while now, you know I went solo a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know about you, but that was far too much of only hearing my voice. So we'll try to keep it short and sweet tonight, that being Tuesday evening. We're coming off of two games in the Caps and Bruins series. It's all tied up 1-1. Quick recap on how things are going. The Caps came out victorious in Game 1 with an overtime goal from Nick Dowd. Game 1 was a very interesting one, at least in my eyes, in terms of how they were playing. I thought they came out pretty strong. It was nice to hear the fans. It doesn't sound like the stadium's at a, what was it, 25% or so? It's like 5,333 fans or some, I don't know, maybe I made that number up completely, but it's some small amount of fans. But it didn't sound like it, especially not when they were mad about the refs or when the Caps scored. So it was great to hear the fans back in the stands. But I thought Game 1, they had some good moments, they had some not-so-good moments, and I kind of felt like they escaped with that game, which is, to an extent, the opposite of Game 2, with Game 2 being that overtime loss on a Brad Marchand, because of course it was Marchand. A Brad Marchand goal beating Craig Anderson. We'll talk about why he was in goal in just a minute. Game 1 and Game 2 for me felt very opposites almost to an extent. I felt like the Capitals played a better game overall in Game 2 than they did in the first one, and yet somehow they came away with a loss in the one that they played better, which makes no sense to me. I felt like in Game 1, the Bruins dictated a lot of the play for longer periods of time than the Capitals did. I thought they played a better overall game. I thought Vanecek getting hurt on that first goal was unfortunate timing. And then you have Craig Anderson, who, as a goalie, 39 is not the end of the world, but it's up there. I mean, it's up there in professional sports, but it's definitely up there as a goaltender in the National Hockey League. And I thought he came in and was not only phenomenal in Game 1, but also Game 2, to come in cold to an extent. You know, he played in a couple of days, it was a week ago at that point, or almost. He got to get the starting opportunity. But Vanecek was definitely going to be their number one, and I think even if Samsonov hadn't done, or had, I don't say done what he did, because we really don't have a lot of information regarding what happened with him and Kuznetsov that caused them to be late for the team function, which then caused them to get suspended for a game, which by the team, not the league, which then, he's not Tom Wilson, which then caused him to end up on the COVID-19 list, which I'd still love to know how the sort of details around that one. I don't doubt that it happened. I just would love to know what's going on, how much Kuznetsov played a part. But I thought Anderson came in great, and he's played really well over these first two games. I think the rest of the team certainly not so much. I do think they played, like I've said a couple times now, better in that second game. But if you look at the first one, I thought the Bruins definitely dictated the play a lot more than the Capitals had an opportunity to. And I think the Caps, what they did different in Game 1 versus Game 2 is that they took advantage of their chances. In Game 2, at the beginning of the game, I'd say the first 10 minutes, and I feel like I talk about this every year when you're going into the playoffs, be it a home game or a game on the road, that the home team always has, especially in that first game, but interesting enough, this was the second one, that home team always has a real big push in that first 10 minutes or so. It's right around 10 minutes. They have a huge push. Usually you get lots of offensive pressure. You know, the other team might get a couple opportunities, but you have the push. And it's the emotion, the adrenaline. It's the fans behind you pushing you to play a better game. And I think we definitely saw that in Game 2 from the Capitals. What we didn't see is them putting the freaking puck in the net when they had their opportunities. They easily, within the first 10 minutes, could have had two goals. They probably should have had two goals because they had Rask beat twice. And he's not a goalie that's necessarily easy to beat. I mean, I know that they're scoring goals, you know, in this series. They got, three goals in Game 1. They got three goals in Game 2. It's not bad. Six goals in two games, I'll take it. But you have to take advantage of your opportunities. They should have, for the most part, been able to run away. Maybe not run away, but they should have been able to come out in Game 2 with a win. So the fact that they stole, maybe that makes it a little more even that they lost Game 2 and really should have gone taking the series back to Boston or over to Boston, tied up at 1-1. I guess maybe that's fair to an extent. But I think when you can steal that first game after not playing as well, you really should have come away with a winning game too. And I think they had every opportunity to do so. Now, we talked about Anderson. I think he's actually played really well. It's unfortunate that Vanacek got hurt. I think that, someone was talking like TSN or somewhere. Kelly Rudy, or however you say his last name, there's an H there, but it might be silent kind of H thing, you know, kind of like an herb. So I felt like he was talking about how Vanacek got hurt because he didn't stretch well. I don't know how much I buy that. You know, players get hurt. Things happen in every sport. Players get hurt in the most random things. In the NFL, I feel like we've seen two or three players who have gotten hurt in outside football-related activities, and that has resulted in them getting cut from their teams. And I could be exaggerating. I just see headlines, and maybe I'm not quite up on all the details. But players get hurt in professional sports. That's the reality. It is almost impossible, I think it's fair to say, almost impossible to go through an entire career and not have an injury. So for Vanacek to get hurt on a play where he stretches, was he overworked? I don't know. Was it a situation where he hurt himself because he didn't do proper stretching? I suppose that's possible. I think it's a little bit lazy on a commentator's part to assume that or say that that's the case. Unless you've been studying his stretching, unless you've been paying attention to what he's doing in the locker room, I don't think it's fair to say they got hurt that way because he didn't stretch properly. Things happen. We don't have all the details. I'm certain the commentators don't have all the details. So to assume that that's the case, I think is bogus. Now, going back to Craig Anderson, I can't imagine the pressure that he's put on himself, let alone is on him now. Considering it's not just that he's the starter. And I remember listening to Caps this morning from, I want to say Friday, that he was on and he was talking about how he's always just kind of prepares. I mean, the guy's he's clearly a veteran. He's been playing for a long time. He knows what he needs to do, but the pressure is still there, especially in the playoffs. And then it's got to be even harder for it to be in the playoffs when you're the backup. Yeah, you could go in at any moment, but you don't know if that's going to happen. So to all of a sudden have an opportunity to go out there on an injury, no less. It's not like, you know, Vanacek was getting lit up and Anderson's going, okay, going to start getting mentally ready because there's odds are if this keeps going poorly, they're going to have me come in. It's a sudden thing where he's got to go out there. He's got to, you know, limber up a little bit and get ready to play. It's not like baseball where the relief pitcher comes in and, you know, he can throw a few pitches and get himself ready. He's been warming up, you know, back in the bullpen for a while. So I got to give Anderson a lot of credit for the way that he's been playing. And then there's additional pressure because he knows that his team, given he's only been here for less than a season, a full season, I should say, that his team, the backup to him, just something happened to him if he doesn't play well or if he gets hurt, is Phoenix Copley. And nothing against Phoenix Copley. I don't feel like I can call him Copley or Phoenix. I feel like I always have to say both together. Anyways, nothing against him, but he's not, from what we've seen, he's not an NHL goaltender. So for Anderson, that's got to be a lot of pressure, and I think he's handled it very well. Does he wish he didn't give up that first goal last night where they kind of got the wraparound type thing on him? Probably. Did he overposition himself a little bit? Maybe. Did it hurt that Dylan kind of kicked his leg out from under him? Definitely. But these things happen in a game, and it's unfortunate. And like I said, the Capitals probably should have been ahead at that point anyways. So I'm looking at the stats right now from the first two games. And there's one thing that stands out glaringly to me. Not just the shots on goal, which the Caps had 32 in the first game and 39 in the second. It's not that the Bruins only had 26 shots in the first game and 48 in the second, so maybe you should stop letting them shoot as much. And you can do that by blocking shots, not giving them great opportunities for the shots so they can get blocked or they miss. Or just maybe, you know, maintaining offensive pressure or and keeping up the offensive pressure like we didn't see by the Capitals in the third period. Once they went up in game two, you could see them ease up a bit. And they were just playing with fire, waiting for the Bruins to get an opportunity to score. The thing that's bothered me a little bit is the faceoff percentage. Game one, the Bruins won 60-40%. Game two, 63-37%. Now, some of that might be because Eller got hurt. And that's fair. Although Eller's faceoff percentage, let's see, regular season. Let's get this to load up real quick. Regular season was 50.38. So, not bad, but not great. And I know, it's against Patrice Bergeron, who is an amazing center. He's great at taking faceoffs. I'm not buying it, that they're that bad. This team's been having issues with faceoffs all year long. I'd like to see it get a bit better. Now, speaking of centers, with Eller being out, he got hurt in Game 2, and he's questionable for Game 3. So let's go ahead and look at the center depth on this team right now. We've got Nicholas Backstrom. Knock on wood that he's not going to get hurt. We've got Yevgeny Kuznetsov in name, in paper, and up in the press box. He's off the COVID-19 list. Good job. He did travel with the team to Boston, just like Samsonov, who's also off the COVID-19 list. But he's not playing. Part of it because he's a dummy, and part of it because it's the COVID-19. And I don't know if he... I don't think he had the virus, or has the virus, as far as we know. But he was around someone. Him and Samsonov. So it's definitely an interesting story there. So you have no Kuznetsov. You likely, potentially, have no Eller, which could have been really helpful. So now you have Oshie playing out of position. Although I thought that's why we brought in Michael Roffel. Like, didn't we bring him in because he'd be able to play in the center spot, and then he's not playing in the center spot? Okay. So instead, we take a goal-scoring winger and put him in the center. Although, I don't know if there's too much to complain about, considering right now he's leading the team in points, that being TJ Oshie. He's got a goal and two assists. So, maybe he is a center. Maybe we just didn't know that. You've got Nick Dowd, who's playing really well. You know, he's only got 1 point, but it's a pretty big point in that goal in Game 1. He's been doing well. But the lack of center depth on this team is a problem. Now, they did recall 4 players from AHL Hershey, 3 of which are high draft picks. And these guys are coming in as black aces. You've got 2019 second-round pick Brett Leeson. You've got 2018 first-round pick Alex Alexiev. They recalled a little depth on defense in Paul Ledoux. But they also recalled 2019 first-round pick Connor McMichael. Now, I understand he's going to be a black ace, and he's just going to be able to watch and he'll practice with the team. And it's an opportunity for him to learn. But I have to wonder, if Kuznetsov is not ready yet, and I almost think you got to kind of figure out a way to get him back in the lineup, especially if Eller's not going to be ready. Because then you're going into this with your top centers being Backstrom, Oshie, Dowd, and question mark. Now, odds are that question mark would be Michael Roffel, but then you got to put someone else in. And I don't know if they have any other healthy scratches right now that can play. You could go with the 7 defensemen, 11 forwards, but it's the playoffs. And do you really want to do that? So my question is this. Given, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later, that McMichael led the Bears in points this season. He was their leading scorer with 14 goals and 13 assists. Does he get a jersey if both Eller and Kuznetsov are not playing? I think that's certainly a possibility. Now, I could be forgetting about someone like Daniel Carr they could put in probably. But is he going to produce? Is he going to provide something that McMichael can't? Because if I'm looking at Daniel Carr and I'm looking at Connor McMichael, and there's probably someone else I'm forgetting, and I apologize to whoever that player is. But if they're going to be able to do the same thing on the ice, is it really going to hurt to have McMichael play? If he can't do any worse than Carr, and I'm not saying Carr could come in and be fantastic, and I could be 100% wrong in this, in which case I'll eat crow, it's fine. I just don't anticipate seeing that coming. I think McMichael could come in. Is he going to be like John Carlson when he first came into the team, where he, you know, kept bumped up real fast? Is he going to be like Tom Wilson? Well, probably not in some ways. Definitely not in some ways like Wilson. But I think if you need someone to play, given how his season in Hershey went, I think you're definitely giving him a look, at least in practice, and probably in the game if you need someone. He can score in the AHL. He's highly projected to be a talented NHL player. Is he going to be an all-star? I don't know. It's more of a Ryan question. Is he going to be a top six player? Is he going to be a first or second line center? Hopefully. I don't know anybody else. And once Backstrom retires, who knows what's going to happen to Kuznetsov. I still don't think he's here next season. I think they move him out. You know, is McMichael your first line center? I don't know. I don't know if that's easy to... Obviously, no one knows that right now. Because no one can predict the future. But I think there's definitely a good opportunity, a good chance, a good possibility that Connor McMichael ends up getting a jersey if both Kuznetsov and Eller can't play in Game 3. Now, given the new... What I've been looking at is from NHL.com. And as I talk here and try and multitask, I'm looking up Samantha Pell's Twitter. She's the Caps beat reporter for the Washington Post, at Samantha J. Pell. I am not seeing much in terms of who they have. Oh, no, you know what? Everything that I just said about Connor McMichael is wrong, because apparently he's not traveling to Boston. So, never mind. No, apparently she recorrected that. Great. You know what? I'm not editing this. You're all just hearing my train of thoughts as I go. So, Kuznetsov and Samsonov are going to Boston. She said the call-ups are not going. But then they said Capitals are now saying they will be taking 25 to 26 players, or 25 of 26 players to Boston. If they have 26 guys there, including like the Black Aces and the healthy scratches and whatever else, and you're taking 25 of 26, if you're that 26th dude, that's got to hurt. Everyone else gets to go, and you're just sitting back in D.C. Well, I guess I'll watch the game on NBC Sports Washington like everybody else. Still curious what that's going to be called after the season. The team is not specifying which Black Aces are staying and which are going, including the recalls from today. And I'm sure I'm forgetting about a couple other players that potentially could be called in. That's not McMichael, but I would definitely strongly consider having him get a jersey if both Kuznetsov and Eller are not available. I don't know. That's my thoughts. But those first two games I thought were rather interesting. You know, and I tweeted this out after the game, because I guess we have to talk about it. The refereeing of Game 2 was a huge aspect, because it was so bad. Now, I'm not going to come on here and cry and moan about the reffing because it cost them the game, because it didn't. Did it cost them a goal or two? Probably, but so did not scoring. They had opportunities and they didn't do it. So sit there and say the refs cost us the game, I think, is bogus. They had plenty of opportunities, especially in the first 10 minutes, to score goals, and they weren't doing it. Now, it was happening where, you know, I don't know, multiple times, which it did. But if you're looking at, you know, throughout the entire game that there's bad refereeing, sure. But you don't have your other chances, and those are your only opportunities they're going to take away from you, fine, you can complain. But it wasn't. That was not the case this game. They had plenty of opportunities to score where they didn't. But the refereeing was pretty bad. Wilson's dive, no. Not a dive. Trip, yes. Bad balance by Wilson? Yeah. Silly fall? 100%. Shouldn't have gone down. But a dive? No. He got knocked off balance. He got tripped. He fell. It's complete nonsense. I saw people complaining about Sheary and... No, not Sheary. Sorry. Jensen. And I cannot remember the Bruins goon or whoever he was. But he cross-checked Jensen in the neck. Now, I get that they both had to go off, but I feel like something, like, not okay. I don't know. That didn't bother me that they both... People on Twitter were upset about the fact that they both got called something. Jensen and him were going at each other. Like, that's fine. But I also kind of feel like... I kind of feel like the refs were trying their best to kind of reel in the physicality, but instead of sending a message, it just got both teams mad at them, which then just made it worse. Like it compounded on each other, where every time something happened, both teams were getting frustrated and it kept happening, and they weren't able to, I don't know, stop it from happening. I can't think of a better way to put that. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how Game 3 goes. I think it's definitely going to be I think it's definitely going to be the first 10 minutes. Boston's going to be flying, and the Caps have to be ready for that. And you can't, you know, give up a few early, because then you're just putting yourself in a hole that you might not be able to get out of, especially if you're missing your second and third line, or first and third line, because Kuznetsov and Backstrom kind of flip back and forth, especially if you're missing those guys. So I don't know. This one's going to be a tough one. Let's see. What else do we need to talk about in Caps world? Oh, the other thing that I know from the game. I totally forgot. The refereeing was terrible. Yes. But that wasn't the only thing that bothered me. Can someone explain to me why the Capitals cannot make a good freaking pass to save their life? I will never understand this. It was so bad last night. Now, I'm not even talking about the blind passes, which I did make a tweet about Michael Raffle, how he clearly fits in on this team considering he made a blind pass. It's like, you haven't even been here that long, and he's already doing that nonsense. I'm sure, you know, other teams do it too. It just annoys me when the Capitals do it. But it was the bad passing. I mean, the attempt, not even passing, but dumping it out. It led directly to Brad Marchand's overtime winner. But it happened so many times where they would turn the puck over in their own zone and not even turn it over. They would just give it up through a bad pass or a bad dump or a bad attempt at something where the puck went nowhere. And I know the ice was bad last night. Fine. They get the puck off the ice, especially if you're trying to dump it out. I feel like these are simple things that they're not doing, and that's a problem. And these are things that are going to have to correct well before Game 3 on Wednesday. Game 3 is on Wednesday, right? Did I just make that up? Where are we? There. Yeah, Wednesday in Boston. Guys, I was right. It starts at 6:30. Really? Actually, that's not so bad. That means that game's not going into overtime for 5 seconds when I'm trying to go to bed. Let's see. Last little bit of Caps news before we get into the other parts of the program. Caps announced that Garnett Hathaway, offensive dynamo Garnett Hathaway, he is their nominee for the King Clancy Trophy. Now, this trophy is awarded annually to the player who best exemplifies leadership qualities on and off the ice and has made a noteworthy humanitarian contribution in his community. So congratulations to him. As to whether he will get the award, I don't know. I think it's pretty good. I like what I've seen from Hathaway in these playoffs. He's physical, scored some goals. He's doing what he needs to do. I like him on this team. I also like that he's not very expensive because this team doesn't have a lot of cap space, especially going into next season. But let's focus on this one right now. So notes for Game 3. Withstand the first 10 minutes. Make a good freaking pass. I hope the refs don't suck. And hope that Samsonov is backing up Anderson, because I don't want to see Phoenix Copley in net. And I think Samsonov's got an opportunity to prove himself if he gets the chance. Because right now, I don't know, there's a lot of question marks around this kid. I know he's young. He's what, like 9 or something? He's a young goalie. He's going to get his opportunity to play, whether it's here or somewhere else. I mean, that's going to be a question for the offseason. So we'll see. But, you know, if he gets an opportunity to get on the ice, I really hope he proves himself. I don't know, but we'll see. But I think that's it for Caps World right now. Normally, this would be the part where we go into the music, but I don't got time for that. So we're going to go down to the farm. Where down to the farm? We're going to start in Hershey, where the Bears ended their season this past weekend with wins over Binghamton and Wilkes. I feel like every week I'm talking about how they beat Binghamton. They also defeated Wilkes-Barre. Well, I know they only play 4 teams. I just feel like I never said they lost. Why didn't I really talk about when they lose? This is a running train of thought, guys. It's great. Anyways, they also beat Wilkes-Barre Scranton, which earned them a pair of trophies as they won not only the North Division, but they came away as the AHL's regular season champions. If the audio didn't come through well, that was a legit clap. That wasn't sarcastic, just in case. They finished with a record of 24-7-2. Now, another Bears news, Connor McMichael was named the CCM AHL Player of the Week. He scored 6 points in the Bears' last 2 games of the season. Congratulations to him. I have high hopes for this kid next season playing with the Capitals. Not high like he's going to be, you know, top 5 in scoring. That'd be great. But I'd love to see him get an opportunity. Top 9 forwards. And then, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see in terms of what happens with Kuznetsov. I don't think he's ready necessarily to be the second line center, but who knows? In other Hershey's news, Phoenix Copley and Zach Fucale? I hope it's Fucale. I think that's more fun. They won the Harry Hap Holmes Memorial Award for the 2020-21 season. Now, this award goes to the goaltenders on the team with the fewest goals allowed per game. Congrats, guys. Let's go down to South Carolina, where the Stingrays went 1-1 with a win over Jacksonville. They are currently and still in fifth in the Eastern Conference with 67 points, 12 back of first place Florida. Now, they'll be back at it with three games over the weekend, all of those being in Orlando. I wonder if they're going to go to Disney World. Let's head back up to Hershey, where the Cubs announced they have hired their first head coach in Brennan Thompson. Thompson, a former hockey player at Lebanon Valley College, has a master's in business administration. Brennan was previously coaching the, I am not going to pronounce this correctly, I'm just warning you now, Palmyra Black Knights at Palmyra High School from 2017 until 2020. That's what's going on down on the farm. Now let's go around the NHL, where we are going to start in New York, where the NHL announced there will be no conference trophies awarded this season since there are no conferences. Actually makes sense. I have no problem whatsoever with the NHL doing this, because how are you going to give out an award for trophies or for conferences that don't exist? So fine by me. When I first saw it, I was like, that's stupid. Oh, I get it. It actually makes complete sense. Florida forward Sam Bennett was suspended one game for boarding Tampa's Blake Coleman. That's not very nice. Team USA hockey gold medalist Haley Wickenheiser was named, she's Dr. Haley Wickenheiser, was named as Toronto's Senior Director of Player Development. Now, she was formerly the Assistant Director of Player Development. Can I ask a question? What does a Director of Player Development do? Like, I don't know. I hear about all these titles in sports. And like general manager, I get, you kind of, you know, try and make moves and trades and signings and releasings and whatever else. What does a director of player development do? I genuinely would like to know. Ryan, hook me up. Tell me what they do. Casey Bellamy is retiring from the U.S. women's hockey program 2 months after making her 14th consecutive national team and 9 months before what could have been her fourth Olympic Games. She and goal scorer Hillary Knight share the record for most gold medals in U.S. hockey history between the Olympics and World Championships with 9 medals. That is insane. And finally, the IIHF World Championship Tournament will begin on May 21st in Riga, Latvia. Looking through the teams, it doesn't look like there's any Caps prospects that will be playing, though I don't know if that's true. I'll have to double check again. But let's look at the Caps prospects playing in the tournament. But former Caps defenseman Jonas Siegenthaler, now playing with the New Jersey Devils, he will be playing for Switzerland. Best of luck to him, except when he's facing Team USA. Speaking of Team USA, their games will be featured on the NHL Network. Team USA's first preliminary game against Finland will be on May 22nd at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's the past week in hockey news, and with that is the end of our show. Definitely shorter than last time. I'll take it. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I really appreciate it if you stuck with me this far. But if you've enjoyed the show, go ahead and check us out, like I said earlier, on Twitter at, I think it's What the Puck Pod, on Facebook at What the Puck Pod. Go ahead and find me on Twitter at WTP Coach Dan, talking all kinds of Capitals-related stuff, like how they can't make a freaking pass to save their freaking life. Also, I'm going to talk about Arsenal Football Club and the garbage season that they've had, as well as occasionally Borussia Dortmund, if I can ever find a way to watch a game, Heart of Midlothian. For anyone who doesn't know what that is, they are a Scottish football team, European football, that is, that plays in Edinburgh, which is an amazing city. If you ever had a chance to go to Scotland when this is COVID stuff is all over, definitely give it out. Edinburgh is amazing. And Scotland's amazing. But go ahead. What else was I talking about? I'm on there occasionally talking about the Bills, Washington football team, and all the little things related to sports that pop into my head that I want to put out there. That's finding me on Twitter at WTP Coach Dan. If you want to follow my usual co-host, Brandon, go ahead and find him on Twitter at Brando Cash. You can find more information about the show at whatthepuckcaps.brandocash.com. And if you're a fan of the Baltimore Ravens, go ahead and check out Brandon's Ravens podcast called what's it called? The Call? I couldn't even remember for a second there. I was in What the Call, which is kind of cool, Brandon. Think about it. But if you're a fan of the Ravens, go ahead and check out his other podcast, The Call. But that's it. That's the show this week. Thank you very much for listening. I hope that Game 3 goes better. Let's get some better passing, some better playing, some better refereeing. Let's hope everyone can stay healthy. Knock on wood. Let's go, Caps. We'll talk to you next week.
This has been a production of Brando Cash Entertainment. Music by DJ Wolfman. Voiceover by Sarah Jacks. For more information, go to brandocash.com.